everyone, to another episode of Maybe Next Year, a podcast still recovering from that absolute barn burner on Sunday. Holy cow. I didn't know if we were watching the Daytona 500 or a football game with all the crazy speed and excellent movement.
It reminds me of a Golden State Warriors game.
It really did. I just felt like the league has got to curb scoring after this game. My name is Frank.
God.
I'm Paul.
Very good. I mean, it's funny because a 9-3 score, like even the NHL would be a little bit ashamed of this score. I think there are leagues in Europe that would be, you know, okay, that's way too much offense. But holy God, was that a slow, you know what, I don't want to say it was a terrible game. I came away sort of having a certain amount of respect for the defense, but goodness, and then of course, like my perfectly legal satellite feed at the bar that I was watching crashed with the last 2 minutes to go, and so I kept progressively like finding the Bills at a different down and part of the field and not really knowing what was happening. Definitely didn't see the Zay Jones play until like way later. So anyway, Bills lose the juggernaut. They drop all the way to second place thanks to a half game behind the undefeated Dolphins, slightly ahead on tiebreakers with the 1-1 New England Patriots. Let's turn to Paul first. Paul, what were your thoughts on this exciting football game?
Well, one, I think barn burner is a fair characterization because I am sure in the history of humankind, farmer's been hanging out in the barn smoking his cigarette and then proceeded to fall asleep with that cigarette and lit his whole barn on fire. So I could see a farmer doing that while watching this game.
Right.
It was one of those. So, yeah, not a thrill, a minute game. I mentioned on Twitter, you know, and I mentioned this last week too, not the most watchable team without LeSean McCoy. And when LeSean doesn't have a good game, then they're practically not at all watchable. Boy, the defense, yes, really great performance. This is a solid defense. I don't want to get too hyped on them simply because there were some times they could have done themselves favors and get off the field on third downs. You know, they gave up some bigger third down plays that helped flip the field and that ended up being a prime importance in a game where the scores were 4 field goals. You know, so you wanted defense to do a little more there. Turnovers would have been nice. I understand those are harder and harder to come by in today's day and age. These are me nitpicking the minor flaws of what was a great defensive performance. On the offensive side of the ball, dear Lord, what find a positive. That would be it's near. There's literally not anyone who played on offense who I can say, well, they kind of stood out at least having a positive performance. The line did not open any holes for the running backs. LeSean today was just talking about there were designed run plays to the outside where they said, hey, stay outside here. He chose on the field to cut inside and you know, couldn't believe he was making some of the decisions he made. Tyrod scrambled out of trouble a bunch of times. But he didn't really, you know, make those tight. He didn't take a lot of risks, and I understand that's often a good thing. But in a game where, you know, you would desperately need to make a play, would have liked to see a little more risk downfield. Of course, he couldn't make risks because receivers didn't do anything remotely close to getting open the entire day. So just really a terrible performance by the offense. This should not surprise us. You know, you asked at the top, Frank, if, you know, we were, you know, if this confirms things we thought about the Bills, if it, you know, gives us any more idea what this team is about. This is not dissimilar from what I expected. I was thought the defense was stronger than I thought they could be at their strongest, to be honest, against a team with good offensive weapons. And I felt the offense was maybe a bit weaker than I thought the weakest they could get with their total lack of weapons. But all in all, I can't say I'm surprised with what went downfield. And I will say, I did pick the Panthers to triple up the Bills score, but I picked it at 30-10, not 9-3. So so right idea, but slightly wrong on the scoring front. But
it's funny because if the Bills had scored 10, they would have won. Scott,
10 would have been the winning point.
Yes, they were looking for it. Scott, anything to add or?
Yeah, I mean, It's tough because I don't want to let, I mean, we'll start with the obligatory, the defense did a fine job, you know, obviously, you know, in most games, 9 points, holding the opposition to 9 points at home is usually enough to win. That said, obviously Carolina has some flaws of their own on offense. I will not toot my own horn too much, but I would point out that Ringer article that I posted on Saturday about how basically every team in the league kind of looks like the Bills and that they have like a great defensive line, pretty good defense overall. The quarterbacks don't know how to play and the offensive line doesn't know how to block. So you end up with a lot of 13-9 games. There was another Ringer article that ran yesterday or the day before, basically pointing that out and how it's just not fun to watch it anymore. So I think that's a separate discussion for the offseason, perhaps about the future of the game. But with that in mind, that leads me to a more, I'm less willing to completely trash the offense just because the margin of victory was not that far off and we still had a chance to win at the end of the game. And ultimately we came pretty close. Now, yes, there have been 8 million close calls like that that we've lost over the last 17 years that have kept us out of the playoffs or kept us from getting to winning records. I understand that. I would say, in this case, I feel like it was a little bit closer just because I don't feel like the Panthers, you know, we stopped them inside the red zone once, but that was really about as close as they got to the end zone the whole game. Like, it wasn't like they had a bunch of, like, missed plays where they were just, you know, like the receiver dropped it in the end zone or, you know, they fumbled on the 2-yard line or something. We were pretty much shutting them down for almost the entire game. Now, if we were winning, certainly Carolina could have turned up the pressure and then making take some own risks of their own. I think that's fair. But I would say I'm not quite ready to throw the baby out of the bathwater. I think with our offense, it's more likely for us to have halves like we had in the first half where it's almost like you can't you don't have an opportunity to get in a position to succeed because you literally just can't do – you didn't get that yard two or three times in a row, and so you end up with one first down and a half. And obviously that's really bad. It looks bad. I don't want to say it's as bad. I think it's probably just not as bad as it sounds on some level. And I will also add, I think one team this thing might want to consider doing is doing a little more scripting of those first kind of 10, 15 plays. I know some teams do that. I don't know how Dennison feels about that. I assume that we did not have scripted plays because usually those tend to work out a little better, I find. I feel like that this team getting off to a fast start is really important. So I'm a little disappointed that we continue to start so slow because I feel like once we are playing from ahead at some point, the defense is able to really pin its ears back and rush the passer and keep people in front of them. But playing from behind is really going to lead us to a lot of trouble this year. So, but there's more to talk about. So I'll
right, to your point, not to jump in, Frank, but one thing that was interesting is you just a positive thing for the Bills. So much mediocrity out there this year. Lord almighty. Like that Bengals game we chalked up as an automatic loss. No, not an automatic loss. Not by any stretch at this point. So,
right.
You know, pretty much any game can go any way. And going to what you said initially about, you know, one of those games you look at, man, we could make the playoffs if we'd won this. At the same time, imagine if the Bills had won this game. What would Carolina think about Cam Newton missing a wide-open McCaffrey at the one-yard line on the series before that would have legit clinched the game? So I think the Bills largely got what they deserved in this one.
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend like they were, you know, deserving of a better moral outcome or that they were, you know, as my friend calls them, moral victories need their own little line. So, yeah, it's great that they had an excellent defensive performance. I mean, you don't sack Cam Newton six times and hold him to 228 yards throwing and not 27 yards rushing. And it, you know, most of that came on one play, you know, without it being a really good defensive performance. But, you know, they played as well as an offense can play when you trade away three wide receivers before the season starts and a fourth retires. They needed to get their ball to the wide receivers, and they can't. They had no answer for the idea that the run needs to set up the pass, and when the run wasn't working, they didn't go to the pass. They just stayed in their little hole until they absolutely had to. And, you know, kind of what was remarkable was how open Zay Jones had gotten and the on that last play. And I don't want to have a talk. I mean, we can talk about whether we blame one person or more than the other. I don't really know if that's a fruitful conversation. What I find blameworthy was that was the first kind of real shot down the field they took. And if you put all your eggs in one basket on that type of play, well, then it's an all or nothing sum. But if you take three, four, five shots like that, which, by the way, you were going three and out all the time anyway, so who gives a shit? It's not like, you know, they were doing anything else anyway. So if you take a couple of those shots down the field and spread it out, well, now you know if it's a 20% chance or a 25% chance, maybe you're going to hit one and you're going to score, or you're going to get down and put yourself in a better position to score. So I was really sort of disappointed. I guess like Scott with the scripting level of the game plan, but also that like they didn't adjust. They just sort of did that. And I don't know if that's a talent problem. I assume it's got to be at least in part a talent problem, because they don't have any wide receivers really. But it's also, you know, it's also a play calling problem in that, to me, you know, when you're 25 attempts is not enough, especially when you're down. Okay. And especially when LeSean McCoy has 9 yards on 12 carries.
Yeah, you transposed the yards and carries. You assumed he had more carry,
right?
More yards than carries.
Right. I assumed he would have had more than 10 yards. Like I would bet that a million times out of a million that he would get more than 10 yards rushing.
Right. We call that the Reggie Bush conundrum.
Right.
He's in the Bush.
You have more carries than yards.
Right. He did have 34 yards receiving, but I mean, that's the problem. It's 34 yards receiving to him, 23 yards to Charles Clay, 30 yards to Jordan Matthews, and that's it. Andre Holmes, Zay Jones, Mike Tolbert all make catches for under, you know, a total of under 20 yards.
I will also add one thing though, Frank. There is also a literal like familiarity level thing of like Andre Holmes has been on the team for, you know, 6 months.
Yes. Okay.
On the team for less than a month. There's some of that will, I assume, get better. You know, Zay Jones, obviously part of that. And that's definitely obvious. I think that, you know, I don't want to talk about the last play too much because it's been examined to death, but
Right. Clearly
there's a timing. Like if they run that pass, you know, 10 times in practice, by the 10th time, they're going to have that down. Like it's going to be either you're on the boundary or you're not, and it's going to be one of those two things, and they're going to have that timing down. I assume that's going to help a little bit at some point.
I agree with you. I just think that still gets laid at the feet of the Bills, because the Bills decided to go ahead and get rid of everybody and bring everybody in at the last. Now, I mean, like what's his name, the former Raven, that wasn't really their fault. He retired.
Bolden.
He just sort of retired out of nowhere. So like that's sort of not fairly at their feet, but everybody else like a little bit at their feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think, now it's just a question of, I think the biggest thing to me is like, what is to be done, which is my favorite question of all time.
Right.
Like, do we like how much farther, like, you know, the Peterman question we did like 2 or 3 weeks ago. I don't think we need to get quite there yet.
Not quite.
But I think the bigger thing for me is, you know, when do we change the offense? You know, what do we change about the offense? How do we fix things? Because we can't go out and, you know, yes, there are wide receivers available, but I don't think getting a new wide receiver is the answer at this point.
No.
No one's who's available. So what can you do? And scripting's one thing, you know, hopefully just waiting and hoping the timing gets better than another. But I mean, we've kind of built the team for a West Coast offense. We can't suddenly just, you know, Tyrod was saying Kalen Clay and Brandon Tate are fast. You know, we'll throw to them on deep routes more. That is not the answer. If Kalen Clay, the guy we signed to a week ago, like who couldn't even catch the damn punt return when he was in on Sunday, if he's the answer, we're asking the wrong question. So
right, you know, Usain Bolt, he's real fast. You want speed? That's great. Doesn't make you an NFL receiver. See, James Jett. Remember that guy with the Raiders? Man, fast guy I ever saw in the field. Remember making about one catch in all the seasons he was in the league.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that's where I'm going with the offense. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, do we want to get to the Sammy Watkins or question, Frank, that Steve posed?
We'll round this one more time and then we'll get to it. You know what? That'll be I'll ask the question and answer it myself first, and that will satisfy me. The idea is that you're right, but these are the pieces we have, right? So Clay, like, it, we can't really go get another receiver. So you're going to have to throw the ball deep to somebody because it's not going to get any better next week against Denver or any other week when people are just going to literally be putting 10 guys in the box and daring you to even throw to a wide open wide receiver, apparently. but Steven had on the Facebook page, facebook.com/BVillesMNY, had a great question. I'll read his whole lead in. After the Watkins trade, some people revised revised downward their prediction for the Bills' record this year. Others doubted that Watkins on his own, even if healthy, would have any measurable impact on the final record. Of course, it's pure speculation, but do you think the Bills plus Watkins minus Gaines pull out last week's game? And that's the right question, right? Yep.
I think it was Steven or one of our other listeners asked right before the season started, like, does Sammy really cost you any games? Is he a plus minus two player? And we discussed that on the podcast. And if there's one game that's come that exemplifies why this discussion is had, this has got to be the game. A guy who's proven he can stretch the field and who Tyrod has proven he can hit deep.
I think it does, but I think that the other thing you have to keep in mind is there's no guarantee they would have thrown it to him. Right? I mean, how many times over the last two or three years, think about that Chiefs game where they threw to him for the entire first half and then forgot about it. So I don't know. I think that I don't want to say yes. I would say yes, Sammy Watkins could have been a guy who maybe could have changed the complexion of the offense for the Bills, and it certainly could have been enough. But you would also still have to utilize him. You'd also still have to kind of and if you add just one more offensive player, even one of his caliber, is that enough to really change the whole calculus, or is it just enough to change it a little bit? It's hard for me to say they wouldn't get a touchdown, right? It's also hard to know exactly how the Carolina offensive would have responded, et cetera. But I look at that, and I think it's a perfectly fair and good question. I think it is a little unanswerable because I think that gets to the me – for me anyway, and then I will let Paul answer the heart of what is this offense anyway, and how much more of a vertical attack would Sammy have necessitated, even in this game plan.
I honestly hope someone differs in opinion from me just for the purpose of discussion, but I really think this is that game where it would have made a huge difference. Yes, maybe they would get away from the second half like that Chiefs game. Yes, maybe that play would be covered better, but having Watkins on the offense and just the fact that they have to respect the deep threat, that's what's going to open up holes in the running game, that they can't put eight in the box every single down, that they can't key on McCoy exclusively. They still hugely focus on McCoy, of course, but when you look at film and you see, hey, how many times does Tyrod hit Sammy for a ball that travels 25 plus yards in the air? With enough frequency that you have to watch out for it, especially in a game where the defenses have been so dominant that they can't just let that go. Maybe that opens up holes in the run game and the Bills mount a drive. Maybe the Bills hit just one of those big plays, and that's the difference in a game of 10-9. Sammy might catch three balls all day, but they're for 95 yards because there was a 65-yard bomb in there for a touchdown. So, this was that game – I really feel, and I think Tyrod's taking on the chin, and of course we'll talk about that a lot as the season goes on, if not more today. You have a starting receiving core of Matthews, Zay Jones, and Andre Holmes. That's you have no real number one receiver, and if you do have a real number one receiver, teams have to watch out for that. They have to respect that. It changes their game plan. And if they don't do it properly and you burn them just once, and that's all the Bills need to burn them on Sunday, the Panthers just once, I think it would have made a difference. I think the Bills their odds of getting a victory would have been about, I'm going to be bold, they would have been 70% higher with Sammy on the roster.
Scott?
I mean, unfortunately, I have to go kind of both ways on this. On the one hand, I would say that to a certain extent, I would say once you're in a close game, a game that's like less than a touchdown difference, at that point, I feel like the talent level of the teams is probably close enough that you can't really blame the GM or the players who suited up for that team that day. Like, there were plenty of times, whether through coaching leading up to the fourth quarter as Frank's kind of been pointing out, like, you have to take the shots regardless of who you have on the field. You have to do what you, if something's not working, you have to change it in enough time so that you can do that. So to a certain extent, I understand that line of argument. On the other hand, I would say that I agree with a lot of what Paul's points were. I mean, Sammy having a threat over the top changes the way that the Bills are perceived. It changes things in terms of making an opening. Sammy's been with Tyrod longer. He has the timing and the rhythm down. And when you're running I think the concern here is that the West Coast offense, while not perfectly designed for Sammy Watkins, obviously runs better with him in it. The better players you have, the better the offense runs. It means that he gets open, you know, a half step sooner, or Tyrod is just that much more in sync with him on a slant route or on an out route, that maybe Zay Jones or Jordan Matthews isn't quite on the same page yet. And that's the difference between, getting a 9-yard completion and a 10-yard completion, or catching the ball or not catching the ball. So I'm waffling both ways because it's tough. I think the deciding factor for me in it not being not taking too much of a thing is that Sammy got hurt all the time. Like, I don't want to say all the time. He got hurt a lot. He missed a lot of games over his 3 years with us. So I would say at the most, what I would do is at the end of the season, I would take the number of one score games that we have, and I'd cut that in half, and then I'd probably cut it in half again. Because he's only going to make about half those games. And then the other half of those games, you know, there's probably something else that could have gone wrong, or, you know, they would have, you know, the team could have accelerated and made a difference. Like we've been pointing out, that Carolina obviously could have taken more risks if they weren't in the lead the whole game. So I'm leaning more towards Sammy not being a huge difference. But at the same time, like, that's our excuse. Like, that's this whole team's excuse this season. Next season, all that's not an excuse anymore, because we're designing the team. This is, you know, you can't just write it off as, well, you know, we're getting used to this offense, or we're getting used to the system. Like, that's not going to work next year. And that includes whether or not Tyrod's back. Because frankly, if you think Tyrod is going to be the guy next year, you kind of need to sign him to a longer term deal. And if you don't, then you kind of need to be thinking about who your next option is anyway, to a certain extent.
Somebody on the radio described it as castrating him, because they basically ripped all of his receivers away and it put him in a position where, like, nobody believes that he will be here next year. So they, yeah, like, you know, he has no real power. And thank you for bringing up, I think that was going to be my summing point, was that even if he wins this game for you, I mean, how many games can you reliably say over the year he's going to be a difference maker in? Because you can't fairly say he's going to be a difference maker in every one score game. He's certainly, I think, as Paul says, a guy you want on the field in every one score game, because he has the potential to, you know, flip all of those. But the reality is, you don't flip all of those. And even if you flip this one, you know, we'll see at the end of the year how much of a difference we think.
It's probably not going to help us against Denver next week. That's what it is.
Which is, by the way, to say nothing, right? Yeah. Which is, by the way, to say nothing of, you know, the little bit that EJ Gaines, you know, gives up on defense. You'd no longer have that. You'd have to have somebody else there. Anyway, let's move on from this putrid. It's weird. I'm very disappointed in the game, but I think, like Paul said, I have to come away from it believing more in this defense than I thought I was ever going to believe in this defense. And so that's at least something. Having gone into this game thinking they were going to get blown out, to not get blown out is just not as bad. But what will be as bad, most likely, is is this week's three stars. Especially since Scott generally has an aversion to giving kickers stars. I want to see if he breaks his rule, yeah, or if he gets creative here. So
yeah, the this is what I'm expecting. Number one star, Panthers kicker. Number two star, Panthers punter. Number three star, Bills punter. I feel that's how it should be. But we'll see.
This is, again, you guys. So the kicker rule, we're already. What were the long kicks today, guys, or Sunday? 34 for Graham Gano.
Right.
And 45 for Hauschka, which he had to bank in.
I was going to say.
That does not cut it for three stars. Sorry, guys.
It does kind of push back on your point, though. I mean, the Panthers got down into the red zone all three times, and they got pushed back.
Okay, all right, fine. It is somewhat okay. Oh, my God, little... my points might be wrong. Just shocked. I might have my facts wrong.
Take that. Impossible.
Who says we need a fact checker on the podcast?
No one.
Exactly. So I will give an honorable mention to Colton Schmidt because, again, everyone also knows my rules on punters. Punters don't get stars until it's November or December or you're punting in a hurricane, which, given the way the NFL is going, I wouldn't be surprised if Goodell's like, nope, keep playing, though he did cancel it last week. But anyway, so Colton does have his six punts for 297 yards, an average of 50 yards a punt, which is just absurd, and the longer 57. He did have a very good game. But again, he's only on the field for those six plays. So there's really a limit to how much damage he can do. Kind of like LeSean McCoy. No. your third star for this game is going to go to Jordan Poyer, who, again, little did we know we were going to be signing a guy who made the Pro Football Focused like best team of the week. Best players of the week, like 2 weeks in a row. Mm-hmm. After his first 2 weeks, like he's
broke up two touchdowns and like real breakups too, like ball in hand sort of thing. I'm gonna crush you, or I'm gonna knock the ball out. Beautiful.
Yeah. And a sack and 11 tackles, three pass deflections, just all over the field. You know, definitely. Again, the whole Bills defense played well. I mean, it was tough not to give it to Jerry Hughes with the two sacks, but at the same time, pretty much everyone was getting sacks on Sunday on the Bills defense. So it's clearly there's some flaws on the Carolina offensive line that I think we all knew coming in, and that was going to be a good matchup. I also don't want to overlook, you know, Shaq Lawson had a good game. A lot of people had a good game on the Bills defensive line, but unfortunately, not enough people had good games on the Bills defensive line. Then the Panthers defensive line, however, can you guess who on the Panthers defensive line gets the second star?
Jordan Poyer.
Laying it on a little thick, am I?
Yeah.
So
yep. I was trying to come up with a Scott guess, like, you know, in Frederick Douglass, but I
you're on the right track, but unfortunately you're just a bit misguided. If only you paid more attention to the North Star Latulele. Was all over the field. He only had three tackles, but he was blowing up plays rest and light. He did have a tackle for loss. Obviously, again, their whole defensive line was just ripping through all offensive line. You know, Incognito sort of graded out well in Pro Football Focus. I don't know how, because it's not like he was, you know, like getting a lot of push down the field. And the offensive line was terrible just from stem to stern. But, you know, as we've said, kind of, you know, the Bills defense had a good game. The Panthers defense, frankly, had a better game. They did play well. So that so that's your second star. And your first star, that will go to Thomas Davis, who was pretty much all over the field as well. He had a little more to show for it with seven tackles, also for a tackle for loss. There could have been others. Julius Peppers had two sacks. Again, Jordan Mills, get a job. Like, don't quit your day job because clearly this isn't it. I don't know what we're offensive line. But anyway, so yeah, those are your three stars. I will just conclude by saying I can't recall an uglier game that didn't have a turnover.
Yeah.
I
feel there was like some serious weak side linebacker. When a weak side linebacker is the first star, that's a sign it's been an ugly game.
Yeah.
Been an ugly game.
Would it have been really terrible, though, if there had been a turnover? Like, if this is what I'm saying about throwing the ball. Even if it gets picked off, but you threw it 30 yards, who cares? Because you're going to punt it in a minute anyway.
There was a really good point that I think, I forget it was Fairburn or Talbot on New York Upstate. And it was like, you know, there's a lot of like taking what the defense gives you that Tyrod was giving us last week. And it's kind of like, nah, sometimes you just kind of have to take a risk. Like you can't just let the defense dictate what you're going to do. They can't just take away. Like if LeSean McCoy is our best player, he needs to be our best player and he needs to go get his yards. Like that's the problem. Like he needs to go do that. Tyrod needs to force the ball. He needs to do something because if we only score 3 points, we're not going to win in a game.
Like, right. I think the worry is that Dennison said that Tyrod Taylor, quote, kept them in the game this week, which is the most ass backwards way of thinking about it.
Because if we won the game, that's the argument.
Right, well, because he didn't turn the ball over, so they're saying, well, we had a chance at the end, and it's like, well, why did you wait to the end to take your chance? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, both your points on the punting thing. Andre Holmes, special teams ace, great tackler. Why not just say to Holmes in the huddle, run as far as you can. I'm going to just heave it. If you catch it, wonderful. Pass interference, also wonderful. If the other guy catches it, I know you'll bring him down quickly because that's what you do on all the punt coverage teams. So just handle it that way.
Ugh, okay. Well, we got to save some of it for later in the year because I have a sneaking suspicion that this is not the last time we're going to be frustrated with this offense, unfortunately.
Probably the last time we're frustrated with his offense during this podcast.
Right. Cordy Glenn, Marcel Darius, and Shaq Lawson also frustrated in that they didn't practice today. Glenn hurt his other ankle. There's no word on his availability. Deion Dawkins may take his spot on Sunday. Darius had an ankle injury. He came back, but he didn't practice, and we don't know how. We hammered him a lot last week, so I think we could all just sort of sub in our thoughts about what the coach probably makes of him personally. And then Shaq Lawson, apparently they are optimistic, despite his nerve contusions, to be able to play on Sunday. So any thoughts on any of these injuries? I think largely the Bills have come out pretty unscathed, given some of the other people who've been hurt this year around the NFL.
Yeah. It helps when you have fewer good players than everyone else. That's so it's true. Like, oh yeah, we haven't really lost that many good players because they're not there. No, these are the injuries on defense should I think the combination of having Shaq and Darius both hurt, if neither of them can play, that's gonna make this game probably uglier, I would imagine, because they're both, you know, Darius clogs up the middle, even on his worst days, you have to account for him if you're an offense. And, you know, Lawson's really, you know, looking like the guy they drafted in the first round after two games. So those are both nice things to see. Glenn, one of those where it's like, yeah, compared, if we're losing to Cordy Glenn we've had in recent years, that's a big loss. But the one we've seen the first couple of games hasn't really been doing much. Of course, you know, he didn't play that much last week because he went out with an injury. But he's, I think Deion Dawkins has been passable and average, but I think injured Cordy Glenn has also been passable and average. So I think that's that balances out at this point, but would be a huge benefit, you know, let Glenn get healthy, you know, for crying out loud. He hurt his other ankle last week. It wasn't even the one that was bothering him all offseason. So, you know, I don't care if it's, you know, season ending surgery, it's better for him to look for a way to permanently fix that problem than try to play through this and play at an average level for a team that even the most optimistic fans are not saying is a Super Bowl contender. So, you know, why are you even going that route?
Yeah, Glenn's definitely a candidate for that guy who in week 8 after year 2-6 is like, oh, Cordy Glenn going in injured reserve, that's not going to help the Bills get better. Whereas if we were 6-2, somehow I think he might tough it out. Right. Yeah, no, I think I'm definitely concerned about Dawkins. Again, maybe he should have gotten some more snaps at left tackle the entire month of August when we knew that Chantrell Henderson was not going to be able to back up Cordy Glenn and Cordy was having trouble with his ankle. Probably would have.
You think we would have talked about this in the podcast? Oh, wait, we did talk about it on the podcast. Like, and we weren't the only one. You know, the press was saying left and right, just practice him at left tackle for a bit. And then finally, when it's like, oh, maybe Glenn won't be healthy, I guess you should try him at left tackle. Frustrating.
Yes. Okay, that's it.
Okay. I was going to ask about our general feelings about the Bills after 2 weeks, but I think it might be better to read some of the questions from Facebook, and they will tease out our feelings about the Bills after 2 weeks, having looked at some of the questions. So, of course, you can always go to our Facebook page. We've already mentioned it once, BBillsMNY on Facebook, or tweet Paul and whoever else is running the Twitter account, at BBillsMNY. Phil,
Longtime listener Phil now. I think Phil qualifies as an LTL. I personally, or Phil is personally not calling for Peterman, but how many games do you reckon before full tank mode is switched on and they try him out? It's pretty clear this year's offense is the problem. They don't appear to be many wins in the next load of games. Broncos, Falcons, Bengals, Bucks, and Raiders. So thank you for, and he thinks that's a 2-5 stretch before the next Jets game. We haven't even lost to the Patriots twice yet. So he ends with a hope springs eternal. Do you, Scott, we've been starting with Paul a lot. So, Scott, do you? Oh, there's a siren. Paul is.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to mute myself while that passes.
Okay. Scott, do you feel that's true? And do you have a guess on when we might go into full tank mode?
I'm not sure that I've changed my answer on this too much from.
Okay.
We were in week four of the preseason, which was basically we have to get to, I think we need double digit losses. I think there's too many veterans on the team to throw in the towel. Teams have made the playoffs at 8-8. Tyrod has a lot of, it seems as though everyone really likes Tyrod on the team. So throwing him away or benching him is not probably going to help too much. I would say we still got a little ways to go before we
Paul, man.
Yeah, it's, you know, with everything going on right, and I so many fans are saying, oh, you got to bench Tyrod for Peterman. I don't see any benefit in that other than putting Peterman in a situation that he can't win in either.
Right.
So, you know, all it does is make it much worse for him, and Tyrod is still at this point a better quarterback. Will he always be? I think he probably will always be, but I am not the one who makes that. Only time will tell on that decision. I didn't think Kirk Cousins was going to be that better than Robert Griffin III, and I was wrong there. So, you know, you never know what's going to hold up in the long term. But I do know that making a change right now serves no good other than to alienate every veteran in the locker room and make the team no better probably in the short term nor the long term, because even if you give Peterman experience, he's just going to be dealing with average to below average talent all around him and, you know, probably regress. So
I fully agree with both your points that why are we rushing to get Peterman in against the Broncos? First of all, could you pick a worse defense to start a rookie quarterback on? And I think that it would probably send a series of ripples through the room that you wouldn't really be able to recover. And so I think you're right. You got to get to double digit losses, or you have to be officially eliminated, something like that before you get to it. I think before the bye week would be absolutely unthinkable, especially since the bye week is before the trade deadline this year. And if they really do go, I mean, Broncos, Falcons, Bengals, Bucks, and Raiders, and you're saying, okay, maybe they can beat the Bengals and Buccaneers, and that's two wins, right? You're 3-something. I don't know. Like,
3-4, you're close. You're hanging around.
Yeah, you're hanging around.
The Dolphins aren't doing anything. The Jets aren't doing anything. And
I'm sorry, the AFC East leading Miami Dolphins?
Yes, forgive me.
The Bills, according to David says the Bills run on first down too much, which leads to predictable pass plays in second and third and usually long. I'd like to see more passes on first and draws or screens on second. David, we will pass your thoughts along to the offensive coordinator. Thank you for sharing.
Rick Dennison when we see him next.
Yes, when we see Rick Dennison next time. Tempting to give all three game stars to members of the losing defense, says Steven. Darius continues to be a non-factor, low snap count, no impact when he is in. We gave it to two out of the three losing.
Yep.
Discounting quarterback run.
Winning defense.
Winning got defense. They got one. We got one star.
Right. And Darius, yeah, he did make one good play early in the game with a good stuff for a loss. But then, yeah, just battling the injuries in and out, 17 snaps. You know, time will tell with him.
Steven also asked whether we think that it's his chicken and the egg question. Is Taylor having trouble finding open receivers, or his receivers can't get open? And I think we addressed that a little. Yeah. In that it's a little bit of everything. And certainly even if you can't get them open, you need to be trying. Which frees us to get to Tom's point. What are our thoughts on Sammy Watkins allegedly being a flat earther? I don't know.
The question I most want to ask Sammy now, which used to be like, you know, how did you develop your ball catching skills and what's up with some of the crazy drills you do, would now be, what do you think happens when you get to the edge? You would fall off, and why hasn't that been reported yet? Well, that is not a question I would ask Sam.
Phil follows up and says maybe that's why he keeps getting injured, because he doesn't account for the curvature of the earth when he's running and cutting. And there was a funny joke that someone said that that's why the Bills offense is the way it is, because they're afraid of throwing the football over the edge of the earth, which I saw. That I thought that was pretty funny. I don't know what to make of it, other than, you know what, as I think about this more, I would imagine more football players than you would think believe this or believe something like this. I think that, you know, I'm not even making like a, it's an uneducated opinion position. I think it's an anti-authoritarian position that a lot of people take.
Yeah, looks like we've lost Frank. Oh, is he there? So he's coming back.
Can you hear me?
Yep, we're now you're getting closer.
Sorry, that was the CIA probably telling me not to reveal the secrets of the flat earth. Scott, do you have any inside information on whether the earth is flat and your thoughts on it?
Yes, absolutely. The earth is definitely not flat, and I'm definitely not being told to tell you that. I feel kind of bad about Clemson University. I understand that he didn't graduate from Clemson University. I'm looking up right now to see if he actually graduated. No, he foregoed his senior and entered the 24 draft. I guess in your senior year at Clemson is when they teach you that the earth is round.
The earth is the sphere. Okay.
Yeah, so I'll blame it on that.
And Stephen did note he's looking for some sort of confirmation.
Yes.
He only found a third-person account. All I found was a thread on Reddit.
It's not a third-person account. The person who tweeted it was talking with Sammy Watkins, and she then said, I'm going to tweet this out, and he's like, okay. Apparently, that was literally what happened.
It's a direct source. It's not hearsay.
It's not hearsay. Someone tweeted at her and was like, what's your source? And she's like, Sammy Watkins. He said this to her.
Right.
And she's a reporter for like a legitimate, I think, the LA Times or something.
So it's hard to imagine she's making this up. It isn't necessarily hard to imagine that he was just like teasing her and said, sure, go for it. Like, part of me believes that might be a thing. And I know I got cut off a little, so I want to make sure that it was clear that what I was saying was not like a, I think that people who think this aren't necessarily uneducated or something, but I think it revolves around a lot of anti-authoritarian understanding of education and what you get told. And I think most people who I know not that I know that many people who, you know, believe this or something similar to it, it generally boils down to they don't trust sources of information anyway. And so once you tend to believe that someone's lying to you about one thing, you can believe that people are lying to you about whatever is convenient for you. And so, you know, maybe he's just like, yeah, I don't believe a lot of bullshit people tell me. And why would I believe the earth is round? It's flat. I've flown over the ocean. It's fine. It's definitely flat.
There's also a marketing element, obviously, because Kyrie Irving obviously got a lot of plub from the flat earth issue last year. And
right.
Sammy, obviously, you know, he's in LA, so he probably needs to keep his name out there.
Kyrie, in fact, that was mentioned in the same USA Today article on it. I do feel the need for a correction, by the way. I mischaracterized Stephen as calling it a third-person account. He said Thyree, who is, of course, the reporter who tweeted this out. Mm-hmm. Not third. My bad.
So there you go. The good news is, you know, he didn't reveal about the secret Nazi bunker in Antarctica. Moving on.
It's there. We do have should we get to the Twitter questions while we're doing the Facebook?
Oh, please
questions?
Do, yes.
Yeah, so we, all from Orlando. I'll read them all at once. We'll address them then individually. And I feel like the bad part is he kind of buries the lead at the very end of a string of two tweets of questions. So, will the drought ever end? Is this some elaborate scheme by the Bills and the NFL to gouge money out of fans? Will the Bills ever get a passing game? How long will this elusive quarterback keep slipping out of our grasps? And again, I don't know why this didn't lead. Is Nathan Peterman related to Jay Peterman from Seinfeld? We have never even broached that topic to my knowledge.
I did that on Twitter myself, but
oh, okay. How did I miss that then? Okay, I would say, you know, on that one, possibly, but we need to do some more research. Could be a nephew I'm say because I've got to see how he dresses. That's going to be the key. Will the drought ever end? We're going to have to change the name of the podcast. If it does, yeah, maybe not.
I feel like the podcast remains.
Yeah.
Which will end first, the NFL or the drought?
Right. Like, I mean, Let Teddy Win is still a blog for the Nationals, and Teddy Roosevelt right. won a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Some elaborate scheme by the Bills and NFL to gouge money out of the fans. You know, taking that question seriously, though, for a second, you got to wonder, like, kudos to the Bills marketing department. I don't know how people keep buying tickets after this, after an infinitesimal number of times where they just can't get things straight.
We're not till Sunday yet.
Right.
Let's just see how many people show up for this 80 degree game on. Oh, it'll be a nice day to be outside.
But there'll be a lot of Broncos fans.
Yeah, it's one of our followers noted she's taken an old Bills t-shirt and has cut her sleeves off of it and so forth, and essentially converted to a tank top to ready herself for the temperatures on Sunday. And yeah, the elusive quarterback, how long is going to keep slipping out of our grasp for just about ever? But you know, it's funny. I was just thinking when I was looking at, you know, we all remember Jim Kelly, you know, we're old enough that we do, and just what a great quarterback he was. If you looked at Ryan Fitzpatrick's numbers back in 2011, you would say, wow, this guy is even better than Kelly. Like, this is what quarterbacking is all about right here. But the way numbers have skewed over the years, it's so tough to judge, but it's one of those things like pornography. You know it when you see it, and I'm hoping the Bills will eventually find that proper passer.
Put it on the Jumbotron. Oh, wait, no, I see. That was a metaphor. I'm sorry. Well, thank you for your Twitter questions, Orlando. This day in Bills history?
Oh, yeah, this was – you know, there's a resource called the Buffalo News that is now doing a This Day in Bills History every day. And I feel like obviously I should have copyrighted the concept of looking back at a specific date and then recounting something that happened on that date, as I know I was the first person ever to do this in any field. I missed my chance. Now the Buffalo News has stolen that idea. So I refuse to take theirs.
I'd like to thank the Buffalo News for listening to this podcast as well.
Yes. Obviously where they got the idea.
We're getting royalties for that, right?
Who's now look, those checks? If they have trivia questions with ridiculous answers, we'll know. We'll know, exactly. Buffalo News.
So this is a I did not go with the Buffalo News one for today because honestly, I think I found a better one, even though it's a more depressing one. We are going to go back to September 20th of 1998. The Bills going into this game had lost their first two games of the season, 13-10. Once at home to the Jaguars and once to the Raiders, and now we're, you know, going to play at home against a Rams team that wasn't quite – it was still a year away from their big Super Bowl win, but was kind of come to their own now. Their quarterback was not yet Kurt Warner. It was not yet Trent Green because he was signed the offseason. It was Tony Banks. You may remember, and I thought about making him the trivia question, but it would have been too – obvious. You might remember this is the season where the Bills, those opening three losses came, and that first one was like there was a 4th-and-20 player something that Jacksonville had, and they converted a bomb. Right. They went for a pick instead of knocking the ball away. So they started 0-3. They end up making the playoffs. I think at the time they did that, they're one of three teams ever. So unfortunately, this game today is that third loss. So what makes this one exceptional is it's a lot like last week's game in terms of scoring. 67 total points scored in this game. At one time in this game, the Bills were had 99.3% odds of winning with 10:32 left in the third quarter. And that still, and even still in the fourth quarter, it was at 98.4 at one point. So they had this game well in hand. You know, Sam Gash, a catch from Rob Johnson to open the scoring. Rams respond with a field goal, another touchdown. Bills end the second quarter, literally 58 seconds left, with a great Andre Reed catch from Rob Johnson to make it 14-10. Then third quarter, first two drives, Thurman Thomas, big 14-yard run, Jay Reimer's my touchdown catch. They're up 28-10. Now let's watch the wheels fall off. And how I'm going to note this is we are going to look at Rob Johnson in this game. We all remember Rob, right? So, yeah, so the Rams come back. They kick a field goal. No big deal here. 28-13. That sort of thing happens. So, you know, still, you know, a 15-point lead at this point. Bills seem to have the games well in hand after this field goal. So what happens? The Bills go 3 and out. All of a sudden, they come back. They score yet another touchdown. And the score, if I could scroll at this point, has changed. And it is now 28-20. And holy hell, we have a one-score game at this point because of, you know, the two-point conversion. So that's okay. The Bills say, let's send out our great quarterback again. Rob Johnson, 2nd and 9, sacked. Rob Johnson, 3rd and 12, sacked. All right, so they got a punt. Lo and behold, they muff the punt. The Rams muff the punt. The Bills recover and get the ball back. So they're you know, deep in Rams territory at this point, following a reverse and a couple of good runs by Thurman Thomas. 3rd and 3, Rob Johnson, sacked. So they kick a field goal. Rams, you know, the defense does a great job of shutting down the Rams. They force a fumble. They get the ball back. So it's like, yay, Bills are going to do well here at the Ram, you know, 49-yard line or Ram 42-yard line. So what happens? Rob Johnson, 2nd and 10, sacked. Rob Johnson, 3rd and 10, sacked. They punt. The Rams come back, score a touchdown, miss on the two-point conversion. So next drive, Bills, 1st and 10 at the 48. Thomas couldn't get a good run. Rob Johnson, sacked. There's a pattern here, you may know.
Yes.
Oh, Rob Johnson getting sacked is that a pattern. The Bills punt.
That game we had Boy Scouts at offensive line? Or
This was I think, more of a Rob Johnson thing than a line thing. We'll get to the starting lineman in a second on this, though. So lo and behold, Chris Moore for the Bills punts 57 yards out of bounds at the 1. First play, Ted Washington, bam, safety. So the Bills now have a 5-point lead back. Wow. And then they kicked out. And by the way, Rick Tootin was a punter for the Rams, former Bills punter, who died this offseason mysteriously in Costa Rica. And I still Google stalk that every few weeks, seeing if I can get details, to no avail.
We're sending Paul on a mission. That's our first.
Don't come back, Paul, until you.
Yep. We will find out. I'm going to Costa Rica. I haven't been there since 2010. So, you know, so after the safety, the Bills get the ball back. Rob Johnson does well to at least move the ball before he gets injured because he takes an unnecessary hit. The Rams, long story short, drive downfield. They have a 3rd and 15 at their own 25. They complete a 22-yard pass on this specific Bills cornerback, who is going to be the trivia question. On 1st and 10, Banks completes it to Ricky Prohl again for 34 yards against the same cornerback. So those were the two big plays in the drive. There's some defensive penalties. Tony Banks on with 2, you know, 1st and goal from the Bills 2, runs it in for a touchdown. Doug Flutie comes in, throws an incomplete pass because Rob has been hurt in the Bills. And what was an actual barn burner, lose this game 34-33 to the then St. Louis Rams. They had been St. Louis for a few years at this point. You know, there's some tough plays, pass interference call on Ken Irvin that set up, you know, penalties really killed the Bills. But what really killed the Bills was Rob Johnson, whose numbers look great. 18 of 28, not great, 231 yards, respectable yards per throw, 3 touchdowns, 1 pick. 9 times. That is a Ferris Bueller's off amount of time of absences amount of times. 9 times that cost the Bills, you know, 40 yards in field position and ended up being a huge difference in this game. The Bills offensive line, I mean, Reuben Brown was on the team at that time. They had some talent on the O-line. This one was largely in Rob Johnson's hands. So the trivia question, I mentioned a Bills cornerback really gave up the 2 big plays on the Rams' final touchdown drive. The 3rd and 15 completion to Prohl for 22, followed by the 34-yard catch by Ricky Prohl that set the Bills up, set the Rams up in Bills territory. Following his retirement from NFL, this guy became a high school math teacher and a football coach. Denard Robinson, you know, credits him for some of his work. He's also credited with getting New York Giants defensive end Jason Pierre-Paul involved in football. You know, he was fired after one season of being a high school football coach at his alma mater. And then he's been a head football coach at another school in Florida, high school in Florida since then. Can you name this largely unmemorable Bill who played for the Oilers in 93, the Ottawa Rough Riders in 95, and then the Bills from 96 through 99. This was actually one of his last games.
Wow.
Let's see. So Bills cornerback, late 90s. This is pre Winfield, right? Because Winfield got drafted in
Winfield 90s. Winfield in 2000.
This guy would
01, 02, right?
Winfield came around, I think 2000 or so he was drafted, if I remember correct. I would have to double check that. But yeah, this cornerback would only play a four more games point in time.
I think this is certainly after Eric Flowers had been on the team. I don't think he came back and did anything. But I'm going to say Eric Flowers. I'm pretty sure it was a safety or a corner.
I feel like there's a bunch of Eric Flowers. Like there's the Giants tackle who got who is terrible and like let Eli get sacked like 8 times on Monday night. Mm-hmm. And there's a defensive end. I think Eric Flowers. I think who played for the Bills. There could have been a corner.
He was drafted in 2000. I just looked him up. So I'm way too early.
Right, and Flowers was on the defensive front as well.
Okay, he also played for the Canadian Football League, though. So
yeah, and he also played for the Rams. So hey, your memory isn't too off.
Well, I think we should just let Scott get the answer right then. And
yeah, we'll just move on quickly because we don't want to take this too long. But the answer is, of course, Amaziah of Judah, king of Judah, son and successor of Joash, who took the throne at age 25. It was a sad day because his dad was assassinated. However, Amaziah, now he did execute the murderers of his father. They're dead.
Of course he did.
In obedience to Mosaic laws, permitted the children to live. Classy move. Classy move. I'm
classy or setting yourself up for future failure? I don't know. Well, but I'll defer.
He did. He, like his father, was the victim of assassins. And though that had a lot to do with getting into a disaster battle at Beth Shemeh and a humiliating defeat there. And then, he clearly he had angered God at that point. So he was slain at Lachish, only to be resurrected later and play in that 99 Bills game. Unfortunately, he was not resurrected in a manner of, playing good defense. He pretty much continued to be just a kind of walking mummy at that point, which really did not help anybody on the Bills defense that day.
I was certain that because my second guess was going to be Stanislav Petrov, who had passed this week, but
that was a good. Well, I don't want to be too on the nose. I think a lot of people would have gone in that direction.
Yeah, so, big obvious fart joke, Frank over here.
Yeah,
I think on this one, Scott kind of wandered off into a lateral plane for a little bit because he had general facts right about King Uzziah of Judah, King Amaziah of Judah, but he's actually forgetting that the one who played for the Bills was the author of the books, Dual Lifestylist, which covers King Uzziah of Judah. Real Reasons, Rulers Resist Replacement, which goes into great detail about King Uzziah of Judah, and They Might Have Lived Longer, also talking about King Uzziah, and that goes into detail about Amaziah, 16-year-old son Uzziah, succeeding his father as king. The author of these books was a gentleman known as Emmanuel Okenbrohi, who is better known as the Bills as Emmanuel Martin, or Manny Martin. So yes, you're on the right track. You definitely have to use that.
Pretty close. It's pretty close. Yes. Good. Okay. Just want to be clear.
Yep. All right. So that's King Uzziah and Manny Martin. Those are the bonds today on what I consider the Rob Johnson getting sacked today. Bills lose 34-33 to the Rams, September 20th, 1998.
It's always nice when we have it this day in Bills history and the Bill is not dead.
Right. So. Although Rick Tootin, the Ram, is dead, and I'm going to stalk him more now. So
you keep working on that.
Yeah.
At what point, Frank, do we think that Paul is actually a serial killer?
I think he's
murdering Bills through time. only to talk about them on the podcast. What
well, if I were, I would at least be able to know how he died, but it's all like done unexpectedly.
But I mean, would you tell us in a podcast? That'd be pretty rad.
The ripple it's Simon Sirica. I'm the one who's going to brag about the crime subtly.
What if this entire drought is Paul's fault for going back in time constantly to kill Bill simply for this day in Bill's history? And he's created a time paradox because he wouldn't be killing the Bills without the podcast, but the podcast wouldn't exist without the drought. And the drought doesn't exist if he doesn't go back and kill Bills.
I actually want to chronicle this in a book called Kill Bill, but I feel like that might be
you should make that into a movie with two volumes. That's a good idea.
And I figured out a way to get Uma Thurman into it too.
Yes.
I'll try my best.
If you have other great names for Buffalo Bills movies featuring Paul and ways to get Uma Thurman into them, you should let us know at bbillsmny@gmail.com, facebook.com/bbillsmny, or bbillsmny on Twitter. You can go to our webpage, bbillsmny.wordpress.com, or search Buffalo Bills podcast, Buffalo Bills maybe next year, in your favorite browser. There's a Denver game. I'm sorry. That's all of our information. Do we want to talk about the Denver game?
The Denver Broncos, yes.
Yes, sorry. Thank you, Scott. I knew I was forgetting something. The Bills are three. Actually, you know what? They're only 3-point underdogs to the
which was insane. The
Broncos.
Yeah,
take the points and run, everybody.
I think what they're thinking is that the Bills' defense looks fairly legit, and certainly the Broncos' offense might have trouble, Trevor Siemian, but. Dude, that defense can score points. The Broncos defense could cover the spread even without the offense. So I mean I think that this is the difference between Carolina and Denver is that I think Denver really could the problem with playing the don't screw up game for as long as you can is people get tired and then they can't help but screw up. And I think that after right around halftime or in the second half, if it hasn't happened already, I think Denver could really blow this game wide open. And I don't see any reason to think the Bills could score. So I'm going to say they get their 10 points, the Bills get 10, but I think Denver's looking at, 24. I think it could be 24-10, maybe more.
I remark, but go ahead, Scott.
I will agree with Frank. This one, I mean, the Broncos pretty much hammered the Cowboys on Sunday, and the Cowboys are supposed to be the best team, one of the best teams in the NFC, a team with the best offensive line in the league, and yet Denver was all over them. Von Miller, defensive backs, like as good a defense as Carolina, if not better, along with, an offense that put up, 30-something points on Sunday. I think their defense special teams scored as well. Tlaib scored on like 103-yard interception for a touchdown. I don't know that this will get completely out of hand because you have the Denver coming east for the 1 o'clock start. So maybe we'll hang around a little while longer. And as Frank said, our defense is nothing to sneeze at, and hopefully we can. Whereas Dallas's is a little more kind of fluid, let's say. But I still think we're gonna lose. I still think we're gonna lose. It may get out of hand by the end. I'll say maybe not quite as bad. I'll say like. Why don't we put it at like 27-13? I think we maybe, and maybe they score one late to put us away really, but I think at home we'll make it a good show. I don't think we're gonna completely give up yet, and the fans hopefully can keep the team in, but we'll see what happens.
Right, I'm gonna agree. I think the Bills are gonna make some adjustments after last week's front. I think McCoy is gonna be more determined. They do have the home field advantage. All of those things I think will help make this a non-blowout. That said, we know what my opinion means because that had been a Panthers blowout last week and was a very close game. So I'm going to give the Bills a little bit more credit. Frank and Scott each have them losing by 14. I'll say they fall by 10. I like the number of points that Frank puts out of 10. So I'm going to say the Bills lose 20-10 to the Broncos on Sunday.
All right. Well, there you go. And this is the first time I think we've all made the same picks all year.
We're all 2-0 at this point.
And I'd be surprised if we're not all 3-0 next week. Yep. So you've got our contact information. I'll let you know how to do that. We really appreciate you getting in contact with us. Let us know what you think of the game. Do the Bills have a chance against Denver? Let us know after the game how you feel. They did. I sadly won't be watching the game live this week, but we will. I'll be catching it before we podcast, I'm sure. Until that time that we podcast next week, thank you so much for listening. My name is Frank.
I'm Scott.
I'm Paul.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a good night.